Francis, like his predecessors, has to say why holy orders are inappropriate for women. And like his predecessors, he gets his knickers in a twist around nuptial theology. I'm a fan of nuptial theology in its place and properly interpreted, but that's not what we get in Corrida Antonia. But we have a really serious problem then, because suddenly we have women are imaged in Mary and men are imaged in Christ. Without women, the church breaks down, communities would collapse. It's for women to sustain them, keep them together and care for them. This is the kind of power that is typically theirs. Who did he listen to? Who does he quote? Who's he talking to? Where's the dialogue? Where are women's voices? They are not there. I think Corrida Antonia is a really inspiring document in many ways. This attempt to justify why women cannot be ordained into holy orders flounders on theology that comes close to heretical. Because if women are not imaged in Christ, women are not saved. What was not assumed was not redeemed. That hand in hand with this romanticization of the female sexual maternal body goes its demonization. This is Freud. How ungrateful, how short-sighted to strive for the abolition of civilization. What would then remain would be a state of nature, and that would be far, far less there. She destroys us coldly, cruelly, relentlessly, as it seems to us, and possibly through the very things that occasioned our satisfaction. It was precisely because of these dangers with which nature threatens us that we came together and created civilization, which is also, among other things, intended to make our communal life possible. So the principal task of civilization, its actual raison d'etre, is to defend us against nature. Now, my suggestion is Pope Francis wants to have his cake and eat it, remembering that he's called one of the strawberries on the cake. He wants to defend his ecclesial civilization by keeping women under control, because if you let them out, they're going to destroy you. And at the same time, he wants this pattern of inclusivity, but you know, we're not excluding you, we're just saying you've got special feminine genius gifts which hold things together. But there are signs of this. Why does Pope Francis call women without pastoral sensitivity, without awareness of the problem? Why did Francis liken procuring an abortion for any reason under the sun to hiring a hitman? Tell a 12-year-old girl dying of sepsis after an illegal abortion in an African clinic, this is a true story. Nobody knows who impregnated her. Her father, her brother, some visitor to the village, who knows? She died. She hired a hitman? Excuse me, Pope Francis? Is this the poor church that is a field hospital, that gets down in the ditch, that smells of the sheep? Where is he? If Pope Francis wants seriously to change our way of being in the world and to introduce a new anthropological vision, why is he not listening to some of these eco-feminist writers who have been writing since the 1970s and 80s? The very system that Pope Francis condemns, this dualistic, anthropocentric, abusive system that Laudato Si condemns, was being analysed and diagnosed long, long before he came to the subject. And absolutely central to it is the positioning of the female body. Laudato Si begins with our mother, our sister Earth. Feminist problems have been pointing out for years the dangers of a culture that values rationality, abstraction over nature, the body, femininity, feeling. And the result is you will get a beautiful, good, docile woman and you'll get the demonized woman. Sarah J. Boss's book, published in 2000, is a wonderful study of how you can track the development of the Western culture of domination, which she does through the Frankfurt School, through changing representations of the Virgin Mary, from the Romanesque Virgin and Majesty of medieval art to the sweet-faced young virgin today, she shows how, from the invention of the plough to the rise of the culture of domination, Mary bears the image of nature in modern Western culture. So let's have a look. There is a 12th century virgin in majesty, a force of nature. Nobody is going to mess with that mother. Reflecting mother nature in a very different mode. Our Lady of Lourdes, not even with a baby in her arms anymore, not a maternal figure, but a virginal Max Factor, because you're worth it kind of figure. Interestingly enough, when I look at some of the art and devotions of the Reformation, in Germany in particular, that's northern Germany is where I'm interested in, my question is, was the matriarchal power of the church too much in this era? When you look at the Marian devotions, when you look at the domestic life of Jesus, when you look at art and the female mystics and the women running around the countryside as beguines and doing their own thing, did the Reformation in part constitute a little panic attack about this growing power of matriarchal church? Remember, these figures were all completely abolished by the reformers. But the other thing about this romanticisation, every year nearly 300,000 women die from preventable causes relating to pregnancy and childbirth. 99% of these deaths are in the world's poorest communities, and you can see Sub-Saharan Africa is the place most affected. Pope Francis has just declared this the year of the nurse and the midwife. I wish he would go to a rural African hospital and see wards filled with girls suffering from the effects of illegal and botched abortion, see mothers dying for want of a blood transfusion, see what the reality of poverty is like. The maternal romance hides a deadly and terrible reality. And you cannot be a poor church of the poor, waxing lyrical about motherhood, if you never mention this. And I'm still waiting for somebody to send me the document where a pope does discuss this. People tell me, that's nonsense, of course they do. It's implicit in everything he says. I don't want implicit. I don't think you can be implicit about 300,000 deaths a year that are purely the result of poverty and the abuse of women and girls and their inability to control their own sexual environment. And by the way, scandal waiting to break, I was with an African priest recently, and he told me that one of the nuns he met at the airport had missed her flight or something. And he said to her, never mind, you can come back and stay in the presbytery tonight. And she looked a bit, he said, the next morning at breakfast, she was an African nun, she said to him, you know, Father, that's the first time a priest has ever invited me to stay in his house and not expected sex. Mm-hmm. So, there is work to be done. But what about every development agency and international NGO today that's concerned with sustainable development knows that you have to get women on board. Women are the most affected by environmental degradation. They're the ones who collect firewood and water. They're the ones who must feed children and keep them alive. A World Economic Forum report says, the endeavour to protect the earth and survive in the Anthropocene stage requires a collective effort which, as the Agenda 2030 motto says, cannot leave anyone behind. Gender equality is a prerequisite, and the new world order must include women leading the way, capitalising on their caregiving, education and nurturing selves. As Neri Oxman said, it demands of us for the first time that we mother nature. UN Women Report, rural women and girls are leaders in agriculture, food security, nutrition, land, managing natural resource management and unpaid and domestic care work. They're at the front line when natural resources and agriculture are threatened. In fact, globally, 1 in 3 employed women work in agriculture. You can go on and on and on reading all these reports that emphasise the full and equal participation of women as the sine qua non of sustainable development. Now, I'm not saying Pope Francis doesn't recognise that. The women in Amazonia are very active, and the Amazonian Synod recognised that. But this feminine genius, this keeping women silent and in their place, is the opposite of what women actually do when they are tasked with changing things in their communities and their environments. Maria Clara Benguela says, throughout Latin America, in the rural areas and poor districts on the edges of cities, there are millions of women conceiving, bearing, and suckling new children of the common people, breaking the bread and distributing it, having communion in the body and blood of the Lord until he comes again, means for women today reproducing and symbolizing in the midst of the community the divine act of surrender and love, so that the people may grow and the victory come, which is celebrated in the feast of true and final liberation. If only that was the language we were hearing. But just whose voice really is being silenced in all this? These are two consecutive verses from the book of Isaiah. The prophet talks of God in the third person as a hero, a warrior, raising the hue and cry and going out valiantly against his foes. What happens when the divine voice speaks? From the beginning, I have been silent. I have kept quiet, held myself in check. I groan like a woman in labour. I suffocate. I stifle.